Okay, we've got a microphone there which should pick us up just about. Can you hear us? Yeah. Okay. So, after all that, where do you want to start? Okay, what about a general question? Do you think that actually God does sometimes lead us and lead his people through difficult times in order to discipline and teach? Is this what God does? This is modus operandi? Kathy, can you start?
Well, first, thank you for this amazing time to consider this. We realise we've only just arrived this morning, but Adrian has sent us all the information. We listened to his talk in the car driving this morning. We've tried to read up what because to do accept what we're saying is coming into something you've already begun. Thank you to Adrian and Andrew and everybody who's provided this weekend to look at these things, because I think it is, from my perspective, hugely significant and important what we're doing. Mm. And what you said last night and what you said this morning I think is terrific, because also it's building our Bible knowledge, the journey through Scripture, which certainly for me, I don't always, I've had to work hard to get that in my head. You're reaffirming that for us, and I think that's really important. And also, I think it'd be great if the other parishes could hear these things. I'm so pleased it's on tape, not necessarily this, but your talks, because I think for the other parishes to hear these would be hugely important, so that we're building a community together. But then, in the context of your question, I think when you were asking us to prepare for this, I suppose I began perhaps with the thoughts that you mentioned as you traced through your stories, is that often those stories are accounts of where people messed up. And we mess up, we do. I mean, life's like that. And we have responsibility for our own actions. And you brought that out, I think, in the first Adam and Eve account and others. But that's not the end of the story. So I think that whilst I accept, and others might tease out this point of discipline, and that would be good to do, I suppose my first starting point is to say that we do mess up. We are responsible for the actions we take. There are consequences. But God doesn't leave us there. And as the accounts that you've highlighted show, and perhaps we're aware of that in our own lives, if our heart is truly on what God wants, he will fulfill his purposes through us. And I suppose for me, that's where I might begin, that's what I might offer first to this discussion. Messing up, actions, consequences of that, but God redeeming it.
Okay.
God finding the way through and fulfilling his purposes when our heart deep down is genuinely seeking that.
Okay.
Is that a helpful beginning?
Yeah. So if our hearts are right with God, this is the key thing.
Yes, I think perhaps in Samson's story, you wonder whether where his heart was with God.
Yeah.
And you might say, perhaps not until the very end did he really understand what his calling was about. Until he died, perhaps. The moment he died, we don't know. And that's the way it is, perhaps, for some of us. But there was also something about God's grace in his life being dedicated and somehow God guiding that. But I think it's this relationship with God all the time, isn't it? It's his hand on us, but are we really responsive? God doesn't...
It's the partnership, it's the holy dance.
That's right. He doesn't force us into a particular direction. We're not on a blueprint that if we fall off the rails, it's a relationship. It's alive. What happens? Then he says, okay, well, Kathy, that's what you've decided, but how about let's go this way?
Okay. That's really helpful. So, and in a sense, that helps us to cope if we recognise that there's an unwelcome journey we're on, and maybe God's at work in it and wanting to help us. Then, the thing for us to do is to
look at where our hearts are with him. And is it?
And know that there's always a way back.
Yeah.
There is always, or a way on. Back to the future. You know, there's to go back to the path, or to find that actually the path, your example of the path going round the mountain, you may think you've missed the turning, but actually if you keep on going and recognise where you've gone wrong, God will join you into the path again.
Yeah.
That's the nub of the faith. It's, you know, Christ has died, Christ has risen, Christ has come. There's death, life out of death. There's always hope.
Yeah.
There's always resurrection. There's always redemption. That's what our faith is built on. And everything else will spring out of that. If we just hang on to that,
yeah,
whatever the journey is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll let others
that's
speak.
Great.
Yeah.
That's really great. Peter, do you want to
follow that? Yeah, I mean, I think thoughts that have been going on in my head, you know, the most recent one, just 10 seconds ago when Cathy was talking, I remember, it's a long time ago now, but being on a marriage renewal weekend, Fountain Trust, if any of you ever remember Fountain Trust, a long time ago, not with Cathy, this was with Jenny. And to my complete surprise, one of the kind of summative key inputs to this weekend was on the person of Mary. Now, come on, hang on a minute. I'm a good Protestant. I don't do Mary. But the point, it was, you know, it's still with me now, even though it was 30, 40 years ago. Because this beautiful picture was painted of this, what was she, 14 years old girl. And what did she say? What one word did she say? Yes. Yes. And that remains with me. And the other half of the same talk was, do you know this lovely picture of the Eucharist? That actually what God did, what Jesus did, was he took the bread, he blessed it, he broke it, and he gave it. And that's actually, I think, a pretty good picture of what God wants to do with us. Most of us, when God says, do you want to be taken by me?
Yeah.
Do you want to be blessed by me?
Yeah.
Do you want to be broken by me? Do you want to be given by me? And so that balance of Mary saying yes, and that picture of us as Christians being taken and blessed, but in order that we can be broken and given, I think is a very powerful one. And it's been very important to me anyway over my life. One other thought quickly, the other word that was going around in my head was CPD. I wonder how many people here live or have lived in a world where CPD is actually pretty important, sometimes very unwelcome.
What's that?
Continuing professional development.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Or after in service training or whatever. And do you know, I think that God calls us as individuals to be continually under his hand of CPD. And I've always thought in my own professional life, now some years ago, that CPD needs to have two parts to it. And one part to it is actually CPD for the benefit of the individual, that the individual would grow and mature and become more competent and more capable. And the other half of it is for the benefit of the institution, that person should be better able to meet the needs of the institution as it itself develops. And I think that's what God calls us to as well. And, you know, the kind of suffering that happens, whether it's on a journey that we shouldn't be taking, or whether it's simply a journey that we're taking because we step out of our comfort zone, because not all pain is because we messed up or screwed up or gone on the wrong journey. Sometimes it's just because I'm out of my comfort zone. But isn't that growing and developing me? I mean, how else? You can't just keep learning and learning and learning and learning. You have to do with your learning. And so I think that there's all of that going on, and it's partly my character formation, my growth for God's tomorrow, and partly it's in order to meet the needs of the church now and where the church is going in its development.
Yeah, so something that struck me when I went to St John's that I really liked, they talked about how the 3 years that I was going to be there, it was all about character formation and personal development, and that's the important thing. Oh, and we did a bit of book learning as well. And I loved the way they talked about that. It's actually, it's important to do some book learning, but there's almost a sense that, you know, that's the important stuff, isn't it? We get all our book learning right, we get all our stuff tied up, but God is calling us much more to actually step into his presence, to know him, to experience him, and that's where we start. Perhaps the blessing is nice, the breaking is uncomfortable. Questions around that? Yeah.
I mean, I really like the idea of the kind of intentional discipleship that some churches practice, but I don't think it can go on forever. You know, otherwise it becomes very inward looking and it's all about my holiness. And that's important, of course it's important. But you learn and you grow and you develop. I think when it comes to a certain point of maturity, the only way that you can learn and develop is by ministering in ways which are beyond what you've done in the past. So that's where you see God at work.
It's a cycle, surely. I mean, if we take Jesus' disciples as an example, they didn't spend all the time in the classroom with Jesus. No. They went out, but after they'd gone out, they'd come back and reflect on it. And it's got to be an interplay. If it's just a discipleship program behind a closed door and you're never going out, then that's lacking something, isn't it? But there's always room for more discipleship, I think, and more going out. That's my view. So, Jill, can you help us with any of this? I've forgotten where we started from now.
Well,
we started by saying, does God actually, is this the business that God is in to lead us through trial and difficulty? Or in order to discipline us or to teach us things or to form our character? And this, I mean, what Peter said, you know, God is wanting to lay hold of us so he can break us. Is that really what God is up to?
Well, we are told, aren't we, that in Hebrews, I think it is, that God our Father, as a good Father, will discipline us as well as bless us. So we are, in a sense, warned that that is part of God's character, that the fatherhood of God is not just all lovey-dovey, in your arms we lay, and all the rest of it. You may do that with a baby, but as people grow, they need discipline. The baby's lovely, but it becomes the terrible twos, doesn't it? So there is that aspect of God's character. The thing that crossed my mind too is that I think almost everywhere in the Bible, God does give warnings. He says, take this way, but if you don't. I think probably the clearest example is those two mountains, which I think are in Samaria, where Moses in Deuteronomy takes them to one mountain and they recite the blessings, and takes them to the other mountain and they recite the curses. Mount Gerizim is one of them. Can't remember the other one. That was an actual physical journey, a warning to the people that there was a way of blessing, but there is also a way of curse that would be cursed. So they were forewarned on that. And constantly, the prophets are constantly saying, if you go this way, God will. So there's always the warning that, you know, this is the way, walk in it, but if you don't. So, you know, God is very fair on that. He doesn't just say it's all blessing. But the other thing that occurred to me is that God is always there. All the journeys you mentioned today, I think, are journeys to places where people wouldn't expect to find God. Especially these Old Testament people who thought God was in the temple. I mean, one of the tragedies of the exile, wasn't it, was that they were forced out of Jerusalem. Well, that's where God is. So they were forced away from God. And even Samson, where does he finally receive his blessing? It's actually in the temple of Dagon. Mm. It's in that temple that he is blessed by God with new strength to defeat the Philistines, which was his job, as it were, why he was called. So even there, in a heathen temple, God is there. God was there when Jonah thought he could escape if he went right away from Israel and the Middle East. Well, he'd escape God, wouldn't he? God was still there. And you can go through all these stories. And God is there. Wow. God is in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. So it's from your presence.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's something that is both scary if we're running away from God, but what a comfort that wherever we may end up, God is there. That's my two penneth.
Yeah. And I guess that, again, depends on our relationship with God. The sense that God is going to be near, it's going to be there, we can't escape. Actually, if we're in a good place with God, that's comforting. But actually, if we don't really want to be with God, or we're not in such a good place with God, that doesn't feel so comforting.
It wasn't comforting for Jonah, was it? Because he ended up thrown in the sea, but he was still rescued.
So can we avoid this? Can we avoid hardship by making the right decisions? And okay, God says these are the consequences if you make this decision. But if, you know, do we have to go through this in order for character to be formed? Is there a shortcut? I don't want to be broken.
We are people in the
world.
Does
anyone really want that? But if
I mean, I think there's also, you know, we also need to bring alongside this the fact that, as with Jesus, the Christian life is one of suffering as well as glory. Mm. Okay. And, you know, in the Acts of the Apostles, we get a huge recognition of that as the word rolls out across the Mediterranean. And, you know, Paul saying, but Jesus saying in anticipation, you know, persecutions will come. People won't like to hear what you're saying. They won't want to know. They won't like to be challenged. And that is part of the Christian life. That is part of the life of Jesus. You know, the way we follow is the way of suffering with Jesus to come to that place of glory and resurrection. So there are hardships of another kind, which difficult places, difficult journeys. I mean, thinking of internationally, you know, what Ram's going through in Nepal, not only the earthquake, but the Nepali government is cracking down on religious freedom, India very much so too. What's happening to the Christian community in the Middle East? You know, if Christians leave, there's going to be no Christian community. But the Christians who are staying there, look what they're going through. Look at the awfulness of how do they hold. So these are other kinds of journeys, aren't they? Yeah. Of pain, of struggle. That how is a Christian in Aleppo thinking when where is God? Or listening to Ram in Nepal. Is it discipline? Do they think it's discipline? Do they think God's forgotten us? Do they think this is the suffering we undergo as Christians? We're going to stay here to the end. The day I die, I'm going to stay here because I want to be a Christian presence when they stop bombing Aleppo. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there are, you know, it's building that picture, isn't it, of hardship and awfulness and the difficult journeys. And there are, and that's just, you know, there are probably many people here in whose lives they've just had one thing after another. And you think, hang on a minute, what's going on? You know, we have a goddaughter whose brother died at 16, whose mother died of a brain tumour. And 2 years ago, her dad was knocked off his bicycle and killed, run over by a car. And you think, she's not yet 40. She has no family. You know, what's going on, God? And there are many other people who have a story like that. So what is the journey? And that somehow, I think that those things we will never know until we get to the end of that journey, the life journey, until we see the whole of life as God shows it to us when we're with him in the kingdom, in the light of eternity. Because some of it is just the mystery that is God.
Yeah.
You know, the darkness where God is. You know, the Exodus, end of Exodus, when Joseph's given the commandment. You know, come into the darkness where God is. There's something about God being in the darkness. There's something about holding the suffering, love, joy and pain all mixed up together. Suffering and glory. And it's at the heart of the whole salvation story. Why Jesus came, how he lived, how he died, how he will come again. And there are some things we can't fit it all together. We don't have the answers to. But somehow we kind of light a candle rather than curse the darkness. We shine a light. We say, well, from the scriptures, I have something of this. I know that God in the past has never forgotten his people.
Yeah.
I know that the end will come out. And somehow we know that suffering is part of the journey. We hold on to the light we have. And we do that in our prayers for the family in Aleppo who's wondering where they're going to see the end of this day.
Okay. There's something else that occurs to me. A seventh journey I didn't mention. Mm. And maybe we really should have done the unwelcome journey that Jesus had to the cross. I mean, that was an unwelcome journey, and surely this isn't God disciplining giving him a hard time because he's made a wrong choice. This is telling us something about the way the world is, but also that God is willing to identify with that suffering and trial and hardship and embrace it, take it upon God's self and
does
deal
this,
with it. This is the suffering God, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and I wonder if that is what I am the way, the truth and the life means. Actually, this is the way of suffering. Mm. The truth is through the suffering and the glory. That is the life you follow. You know, we have one way of interpreting that, which I also accept, but is not the other way of seeing it. Is this is the way. Look at my life.
Because the context of that statement is Jesus saying, I'm leaving you.
Exactly.
I'm going. And they're saying, I don't want you to go.
Yes.
What do you mean you're going?
Yes.
And he's saying, I'm going.
Yes, because this is the nature of that life that we are called to follow. And that's not easy.
And, you know, I sometimes think that we're a bit disingenuous about our use of the word blessing. Because, you know, we do want to be blessed. And we do want our life and our work for Christ to be blessed. But we want to define what blessing means. And actually, you know, the sort of marriage of words like joy and suffering in the New Testament is quite common, quite often.
Yeah, yeah.
To know the joy of suffering with Christ, Paul talks about.
Yeah.
Or suffering like Christ, Paul. And so, you know, how do we define, you know, what spectacles are we wearing when we're looking at a word like blessing? We want our ministry to be blessed. But, you know, do we want God's life and work on earth to grow in the way that we choose rather than the way that he chooses? And I think, you know, just a personal comment, I'd be surprised if I'm the only person here who could say that at two or three of the most difficult places in my life's journey, God has been the closest.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I want God to be really, really close when I'm having a really, really nice time. But I'm not awfully sure that it works like that.
Interesting, yeah. And I'd certainly say my greatest sort of character, formational stuff, certainly happened in those 3 years up at Bible College in Scotland, after having listened to the teaching about Joseph in prison, that's the place is unpleasant. There were some really difficult things about that, but actually that's where I think I did a lot of my growing as a person.
It's,
yeah.
it's the story of Joseph that I do find very inspiring. Mm. And of course, Joseph is a very good example of someone who sees God at work by hindsight. And I'm just thinking of that when his when his brothers beg him after his father's died, beg him to forgive them. He says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." Now that is that's Genesis 50 verse 20, a wonderful verse to hold on to, but he says it from the benefit of hindsight. And I think most of us, I mean, the Bible constantly tells us to, the Psalms, for example, often say, look back and see what wonderful things God has done. And I think most of the stories you've told, the journeys that you've listed, you know, it's looking back with hindsight, you can see God at work through the good times and the bad times. But at the time, it must have been pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's interesting. And sorry.
Well, just another thing from that story. It's a very interesting thing to do a little character study on Judah. Because who was the guy that had the bright idea of selling Joseph to the Egyptian slave traders? Judah. Who was the person who, however many years later, was begging Joseph, although he didn't know he was Joseph, begging him not to keep Benjamin in captivity, but to take me instead? Judah profoundly changed through that story. Remarkable, actually.
Yeah, so all the brothers were on a journey of their own. And,
you know, the character change in that man was phenomenal.
And I'd like to try and gather this into how this applies to us. And I asked the question yesterday, give us the words that come to mind when you think about the journey we've been on here the last few years, the journey that's led us here. And we have all these words, and I love Julie's reflection, actually, that there's a real different set of experiences that many of us have. Or maybe, you know, Joseph had one journey and Judah had another, but it's a bit like that. We've all had these different routes to where we are. We find ourselves gathered together, and all of us really wanting to be in fellowship, to be united, to be journeying together in whatever way God leads. But there's a lot of pain and disappointment and, you know, difficult stuff there, as well as there being the joy and the excitement and the hope and the promise and that. And so we've got all these things going together. And I was reflecting with Caroline yesterday, you know, Paul says that we should rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. But if you're in the same room as people who are weeping and rejoicing, what do you do? And there's the sense that we've got this, you know, there's got to be the space to rejoice and to weep and to have it so that it's okay to be true to where we are as we journey. But through it all, what's God doing and where's he leading us? And some of this pain and difficulty and trial of the journey that's led us to here, how do we recognise God? And is it a hindsight thing? You know, how will we look on the journey in some years to come, and how will we reflect on it then? As we're looking back, we see some of God's hand, but we also see some of the difficulty. But maybe there's God's hand in that as well, in terms of the formational stuff that's going on with us. I don't know. I mean, very quick, because we want to have a bit of time for people. But do you see any of this? How does this apply to us now?
In another word I would use, you've used adventure, is the word quest.
I like it.
And I think in literature, you know, seven basic texts, quest is one of the words used in literature for the adventure story. But to me, it's always been an important word, because it's about being on a journey with an intention.
Yes.
Which is like you summarised your word adventure. And I think we could say that The Lord of the Rings is about quest and another type of story. So I think holding on to the idea of quest, we are on a journey with an intention, is something I feel we have very much, we are very much moving on that journey and building. And I suppose, practically speaking, from one of the villages, smaller villages, it's hugely important, the journey we took towards the end of Jess's time through Dawn's period of leadership, and then through our vacancy, and now your coming, is that we started working together as four parishes, recognising the differences and the different journeys we'd had, and trying to say, how do we learn together? How do we do things across the parishes? How do we recognise the complementarity of them? In a way that never in history has that been done before. And there is a model building on from that. You know, if, as we learn, that Hethel Church was possibly a plant from Wyndham Abbey way, way back, you know, in the sort of 800s or 900s or 1100s, as the way in which Wyndham Abbey was planting churches to minister to the countryside. Well, now we're called to do the same. We're called to be like little Minsters reaching out, and we're doing that as a team. So now we're called in our complementary ways towards that new quest. So that's a very sort of practical way. Mm. I suppose scripturally, the whole story of Jacob speaks to me about, he was a bit of a wheeler dealer. He was a bit like your Samson guy. How far can I push the boundaries? And tried to, you know, find a wife by all sorts of means, and got himself, you know, held back, and not until he got the person he wanted, and then he was fleeing from Laban, and then he had, on his fleeing journey, he had those two special encounters. He wrestled with the angel. Suddenly, in an unwanted way, God intervened. So in all of these times, we have times of intervention of God. Yes. Even
Bethel on his first journey, running away from having stolen the birthright.
Yeah, and so all of these times there are these interventions of God when in fact the hearts weren't seeking them. Mm. I mean, we could list a whole load of the times when perhaps people's hearts weren't inclined, but God intervened. So Jacob wrestled with that angel. And, you know, his hip socket was pointed out. You know, the strongest part of his life, part of his body life, he was put out of sync. But God reformed him. God intervened. He wrestled. And then he went on and saw this amazing vision of the angels coming down.
Yes, that was at Bethel.
And, you know, the wrestling was at Peniel, and the seeing the angels at Bethel. And what did he say? Surely the Lord is in this place, and I never knew it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me, that's just the most wonderful recognition that we're on this journey, and we think, you know, my goodness, God's put me here, and what is there here but ploughed fields and trees?
Yeah.
But surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not recognize it. What is God doing?
Yeah.
God is here.
And there's something about that visibility of God, and perhaps in terms of the benefits, the four parishes, the one thing we've all got in common is that each of us is the only visible worshipping community in the parish, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's our common ground. We're called to that parish quest, parish adventure.